Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Coming up, the latest on the Kansas City Royals from our team here at KCSN. All of our Royals content is brought to you by KC Strength and Conditioning, experts in baseball and softball training for kids ages 8 to 18. If you're in need, you're in luck. John and his crew have sent hundreds of players to college and the pros. That's KC Strength and Conditioning. And now, it's time for the latest updates on your Kansas City Royals.
What's up, y'all? This is One Royal Way here on Kansas City Sports Network. I'm Joel Penfield. Jordan Foote and Josh Guys are joining me as always. Gentlemen, I wish we could have recorded after the Chicago series because we'd be having a hell of a lot more fun.
Yeah, that's an understatement, man. And I was kind of bragging that I'd fixed this team because I tweeted and they were like 5-5 or something. Like, it was something very not impressive, but I was like, oh man, the Royals are fixed. Like, I saved them, and now they've come back down to earth. So that was not the case.
The winning against the White Sox 3 games out of 4 games is almost cancels out the bitterness of the start, because I hate the White Sox. I just hate them. So to me, they won 6 out of 8 in that series, more so than 3 out of 4. So I'm all right with it.
If the White Sox weren't like an abomination of a franchise season, it would feel so much better. Like, if they were actually good, it'd be even better. But still, like, to see them win and to win the series the way they did on the Freddie Fermin walk-off bunt, a little safety squeeze, like the cojones on Freddie Fermin to get that down, and on Cutrero to make that call in that spot, that was really impressive. That series was a ton of fun. Save the Lucas Giolito game he shoved, but he's been inconsistent, but he has his games. I'm not that worried about it. They got to Lance Lynn. It was really nice to see, and then they got a real nice dose of reality heading up to Milwaukee, got swept. The offense was still okay in that series outside of the Corbin Burns game, but it's Corbin freaking Burns. Like, he's gonna do that. And then Michael Wacha, of all people, shoved it up their ass last night. So there's that. Michael Wacha, he hasn't been good since like 2016.
Isn't there like a long history? But yeah, it's Matheny, right? When he put him in the World Series after he hadn't pitched for like a billion years, and then he got shelled, and everyone said, "Oh my God, if we couldn't have predicted that this was going
to
happen."
Yeah, and but then of course he went to the Rays a couple of years ago and got fixed. So there's that. Irregardlessly, as our buddy Josh would say, we're going to have a good time tonight. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about Salvi's home run heater. The good of Nick Prado and the what the hell is going on with Brad Keller. And then obviously the minor league stuff at the very end, like we do every episode. And as always, we can't thank Kansas City Strength and Conditioning enough for sponsoring this show. Be sure to check them out. If you have a baseball or softball player in the area that needs a place to train, one of the best areas in Kansas City to go and train, for not only baseball and softball, but obviously we are a baseball show, so that's what we're going to go with. Be sure to hit that like button, hit that subscribe button on all platforms, YouTube, Spotify, iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review on the audio platforms as well. So we talked about it a little bit in the open. I don't have too many more overarching thoughts, but the Royals did take 3 of 4 from the Chicago White Sox and then got swept up in Milwaukee. Milwaukee's first place in the NL Central, and then they're out in San Diego right now and got 2 hit last night by Michael Wacha, who took a no-hitter into the 8th inning. Michael Massey breaks that one up. We're recording about 30 minutes or so before first pitch on Tuesday, Brady Singer going against Seth Lugo. I'm not going to try and have any sort of opinion on this game because there's no point considering we don't know what's going to happen. I just want to see a little bit better performance and hope Brady Singer builds off of his last start against the White Sox when he only gave one run in six innings. A really nice bounce back for him after a couple of rough outings. Seems like he's starting to get back on track to the Brady Singer that we've come to know over the last year or so. Do you guys have any other thoughts?
I have a thought about the game tonight, and it's because I see in the future, and it's outrage. Everything's bad. Things are going horribly awry in Kansas City. Everybody needs to be fired, and it needs to be shipped down to the studs.
Our pets' heads are falling off.
Just going back, last week I talked about, like, I think I made the analogy of, like, going into the A's series where you kind of thought you were going to get your ex to get back together with you just in time for prom season, and that didn't happen. I'm going to build upon that. So we're still in the prom analogy. The White Sox are like the class cutie that broke up with their ex, right, like, just the week before prom. And, boy, did you slip right in there opportunistically. And asked her, she said, yeah, and everything's fine and dandy. Then you went to Milwaukee, and the ex came back into the picture the night before and threw dog poop at you because you're such a stupid person that thought you had a chance to go to prom with the cutie. That's just the way it feels like. It feels like it's down the dumps. I don't love it. Joel, you said the offense was fine. It was, kind of. I do have an issue. They had 46 strikeouts in five games, 41 base runners in those games. The starters, for all intents and purposes, outside of Jordan Lyles and Brad Keller walking the entire earth the other night, as a total, as a unit, the starters went 21 and a third innings, pitched 14 earned runs over the last five games. I'm sorry. Half of those earned runs came from Jordan Lyles. 21 hits, 16 walks. Half of those came from Brad Keller and only 17 strikeouts. So we kind of talked about the offense is starting to kind of creep up, just for the starters to kind of start creeping down. So trying to get all these cylinders to bang at the same time, but it just seems like they're just trading places. Now they're both at bad levels. So I don't know. This is going to happen from the rest of the season. I think it's all about tinkering, and it seems like that's been the name of the game so far. So once they kind of get zeroed in, hopefully we'll start seeing some longer stretches of success.
Yeah, well, and you look at, they had a mixed bag. Like the Milwaukee game, they lost 4-3. Greinke had an okay game. He only gave three hits. He struck out five. He was generally pretty good. The bullpen didn't get shelled. It was a mostly positive thing. Brady Singer had two walks, four strikeouts, gave up five hits in six innings. That was not an elite outing, but for Brady Singer this season, definitely a positive development. Brad Keller, he walked four in that first start, but he pitched five innings, gave up three hits, struck out four. Then you also have the flip side of it. The offense was striking out a ton. There wasn't great plate discipline. It's capped off by the first San Diego game where they had, what, three base runners and two hits all night?
Yeah, Matthew and Vinny were the only hits. I know that.
Yeah, and then they had a walk somewhere in there too. It was not pretty. And this is a not pretty team. Like, we're going to recycle some of the same old talking points, but it's because these are persistent problems. The starting pitching is going to be a persistent problem. Finding guys to eat up innings, and I don't want to hear the Jordan Lyles thing. Like, I totally understand the logic of, okay, they shouldn't have signed Jordan Lyles. Now look at how bad he is. When they signed him, there was a clear role of he was going to eat up innings. He was going to do this at an appropriate level. Wasn't going to be good. Wasn't going to be a train wreck. He's regressed in almost every form. Like, you look at his number, everything has been bad. This is not what they thought they were going to get. And everyone said, oh, this would have, you know, saved the team. This is the thing dragging them down. I'm like, well, on a list of reasons this team is bad this year, he's one of them. He's not the reason. And everyone wants to focus in on him. They want to focus in on Hunter Dozier. They want to focus in on lineup decisions. It is a full complement of that stuff, all the little pieces coming together that make it look bad. And if this was a team that was around 500 and this was holding them back to six or seven games below, they were competing for a playoff spot, this would be a lot bigger deal. And I'm not trying to say that they're not forming bad habits, so to speak, of investment, but like, this team now is not going to be the the level of investment, the level of backing of guys like Jordan Lyles that I expect to come 2024, 2025. So everyone kind of take a step back. He hasn't been good. He's been objectively poor. The contract is objectively bad right now. There's not one main reason why this team sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy that, I don't know why everyone is shocked that the guy that came in with like a career 5 ERA has like a 7 ERA.
It's like, oh, well, I wonder why he isn't performing at high.
And the irony of it all, and the irony of it is that his outing, I think it was on Tuesday, when he went CG and gave up 4 runs, walked up, it was probably one of the best starting pitching outings the Royals have gotten all year.
Yep.
This is exactly what I tweeted, and I got roasted for it.
Welcome to Twitter, buddy.
I'm always going to roast you, Josh.
That's fine. I'm pretty good on a spigot, if you know what I mean. The take I was kind of working on, and I'm not quite, this is pretty half-baked take territory. So it's almost like whatever your take is on Jordan Lyles, you're right. Yeah. Like, he has
honestly, that is probably the best assessment I've heard of Jordan Lyles.
Yeah. The contract, awful. His numbers, awful. He is here to eat innings. Yep. He's here to be a veteran presence in the locker room. Yep. Maybe he's here to try to rediscover something, so maybe he can try to get a contract after this one next year. Yep. I just feel like everything that you can actually throw out there with some kind of reasonable rationale reasoning behind it is right.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is at this point. I think he started 9 games. The Royals have lost all of them. I think it's one of the first times in big league history that that's happened. Very dubious honor there for number 24.
It's surprising that a Royals pitcher hasn't done that already.
Right, you think it would be Zach Greinke, right?
I was going to say that same thing.
By the way, shout out to Zach Greinke, fifth pitcher in Major League history to strike out 1,000 unique batters. That is so, that's one of those weird stats that's probably doesn't, I don't know how much it means, but it's really cool to see.
Yep.
I mean, the dude's been around for 20 years, so inevitably that's going to happen. Like, he joins like Greg Maddux and Nolan Ryan. Like, think about any pitcher that pitched for a really long time and struck out a lot of dudes. They're probably on that list. But for Greinke, it's another notch in the cap for him that he's been around and still striking guys out. I think he's probably striking out guys at a higher clip this year than he was last year, which is saying something. Just another notch in the belt as he makes his way to Cooperstown in a few years. So it's pretty cool.
Equally exciting, a good road.
Yes, that is big.
He'd actually pitched well on the road, which seems to be a very rare occurrence these days.
So he is back up to almost his 2021 strikeouts per nine. It's at 617 right now. It was 632 back in Houston. It was 480 last year. So the walks are down. He's allowing almost twice as many home runs per nine. So like, there's a little bit of noise there. And I don't know. I personally am, I don't want to say concerned, but skeptical about his durability, especially with the forearm stuff last year. And like, he's old, and I'm just calling it like it is. He's an aging pitcher who might not even be aging. He's maybe an ancient pitcher, especially for a starting guy with that many innings under his belt. But he's going to give you some good home outings. He's going to give you the veteran, I think, leadership can be an appropriate word, even though it is Zach Greinke. He leads a different way than 99% of people lead. But
everyone,
it's by example.
Definition. He's the living embodiment of leading by example. And you know, some locker rooms need that guy. Yeah. And I will say, like, you talk about the home run numbers, and part of me doesn't, like, I'm not as worried about that because he's throwing strikes. He's not walking a ton of guys.
He's raiding the zone.
The plate. He is doing what Sweeney and Bove want, which is throw the ball over the plate. Like, I think it was our buddy Alex that jokingly tweeted something like, you heard a rumor that the Royals are basically like, hey, here's some money. Like, if you give up a first pitch homer, okay, you threw strike one. Cool. That's what we want. Process results, they'll meet at some point. It is what it is. The fact that the Royals are getting Zach Greinke every fifth day right now, and he's going out there and giving you at least 5-6 innings, that's what they need. And so that's what they're going to get, and hopefully they get it for a while. Salvi hit a couple of home runs in Milwaukee. He hit a couple of home runs in the Chicago series as well. He just hits them in bunches. Every single time, it feels like he'll go 2 weeks without hitting a home run, and then he'll hit 6 in 8 games. The one he hit on Sunday was wild. It was a sinker down that he just took a 7-iron to and hit it 433 feet. His ability to to do that and hit the ball out of those, like, balls out of the zone that far.
Yeah.
Like, there aren't many guys in the history of the sport that can do that. Like, Vlad Sr. comes to mind. Salvi's on one of those, like, he's a bad ball. Like, he's a good bad ball hitter. Some of the swing decisions make us want to tear our hair out. But more often than not, he gets the barrel to some of these pitches that not many other dudes do. And there is something to be said for that, that he's made it work. A lot of guys that don't walk like him are awful hitters. And he finds a way to be a league average to above league average hitter, swinging at just about everything.
Yeah.
It's confounding, but it works.
It's the opposite of a Nick Prado, right? Nick, yeah. I ain't swinging at that shit, Prado. It's Salvi, I'm swinging at all of that. And he's hitting 375 in his last four games. Like, we just talked about him pretty, I don't want to say extensively, but we talked about him last week, and he has two home runs since then. He's up to a 293, 338, 537 slash, a 132 weighted runs created plus. So he continues to be great. And that's what we expect out of him, which for a 33-year-old catcher who has that many innings under his belt, and also has been a part of a lot of bad teams and been dragged down by that, kind of take it for granted a little bit. It's always worth bringing up. I think kind of like on Chiefs podcast, when people say, well, you know, Patrick Mahomes, don't take him for granted. I think Nate Taylor has said that a lot. Kind of the same thing. Like, Salvador Perez, obviously nowhere near the level of a Patrick Mahomes, is the best player in the sport, but it's something that Kansas City should appreciate.
And I think that a lot of this production has really come over that last 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
Joel, you kind of mentioned he does it in bunches. This is absolutely a bunch. Over the last 2.5 weeks is about 40% of his total, like, plate appearances this year. Over that time is 7 home runs, a 64.4% hard hit rate. That's crazy. That's crazy town, hard hit rate. That equated to an 1178 OPS. And like we mentioned last week, he's taken walks at a 6.3% walk rate. Joel, you mentioned pre-show that he hasn't taken one in a week, but prior to that, he was actually seeing pitches. He's only striking out 22% of the time. A lot of this seems somewhat sustainable. I don't know if it's real, but at this point in the season, all of that kind of tracks to where his season has gone so far. So it seems like this is at least potentially a new approach, Salvi, or something's changed. Maybe the cloudy vision he talks about always going on a heater when that kind of pops up. I don't understand that even a little bit. Seems very much the opposite, but it was just very interesting timing. So all is this to say, if this is a new Salvi, all things, there seems to be more and more smoke that keeps popping up about potentially trading Salvador Perez. So I bring to the table tonight, is there a chance that Salvador Perez gets traded at some point before his contract is up?
No.
Not what should happen, but I don't think there's a chance they do.
No, I think he means too much to the organization.
Yeah.
In more ways than just on-field production.
Yeah.
I don't see them doing that.
And I think that once they slapped that C on his chest, that was it.
Yes.
The contract is one thing that JJ talks about, wanting to be more transactional. But once they slap that captain sticker on his
not American,
it's done deal. So Salvi is around for the remaining of his at least 4 seasons and $64 million over that time.
You know what, Mike, there are certain times where you overpay a contract and it really hurts and it's like, God, why did they do that? I don't feel that way about Salvador Perez at all. Even if he hits a steep decline, it's like he's already, like, that contract was worth it to me, regardless. Like, yeah. I'd look at it that way no matter what. He earned that contract. I think there's still some of it is paying for the, what was it, the 6-year, $21 yeah. million dollar that yeah. they gave him really right away.
Yeah.
I think you, like, hey, we'll kick some money down the back end of your deal. And that first year of the contract, he had 48 home runs. So, like, he kind of paid for a lot of it right away there. 100%. He still, there's more value to Salvador Perez than just the on-the-field stuff with this organization, how he conducts himself in the locker room, off the field, in the community, things like that. To where I'm not worried about the long term of that contract. I'm just not.
Yeah. It just keeps popping up. Like, I don't.
Yes. Yeah. Is it too homery of me to say I'm not worried about Salvador Perez's contract?
Probably.
We should make you think about what you did over break, right?
Good enough. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Make sure you download our new app. Find it on the App Store or Google Play. Just search KC Sports Network.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button on all platforms. We really appreciate it. We're trying to grow our channel. Hopefully one day we can meet the Chiefs stuff. No, we won't. Sorry. It's a dream, right?
It's a tall order, man.
It's a really tall order. Hey, maybe one day. Maybe one day. It's all you got to tell yourself sometimes, right?
Maybe we can stop striking out 13 times against Michael. What you talking about? Nobody.
Damn you, Rays, for fixing Michael Walker.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. We'll catch you.
See you later. Yep.
So we talked about Salvador Perez, and that was great and all, but we really need to address the elephant in the room on the pitching staff, and it's not Jordan Lyles, surprisingly enough. Brad Keller threw up. I think calling what he did yesterday in San Diego a stinker is about as nicely as you possibly could say it, and even his last outing against Chicago, like five innings, four walks, four strikeouts, only gave up one run, But man, the walks are just terrible. And then it got worse in San Diego. Eight walks in 3 2/3 innings. He threw 94 pitches, only had two strikeouts. Somehow he only gave up three runs.
Yeah.
Like if there is anything you could say about anything positive you could say about Brad Keller is, man, he walks a lot of dudes, but the fact that the ERA is only 4.36 is a miracle in and of itself. I don't know what you do with Brad Keller at this point. Because I don't think the walk issues are going to stop in the bullpen. And it feels like malpractice to keep sending him out there every fifth day if he's going to walk the leadoff batter just about every inning, it seems like. It's the opposite of what the Royals are trying to do, which is raid the zone. And there are dudes in the minor leagues right now that are actually doing that. And we're going to talk about them on the minor league side here in a little bit that are actually trying to get – they're doing what the organization is asking of them, which is throw strike one and get ahead of hitters. Brad Keller's not doing it. And it's not like he's close on a lot of these pitches. It is non-competitive. I'll show a chart here in a minute. I'll let Josh and Jordan get in here. But I don't know what you do at this point because it's – not getting any better. Like the way he leads the league in walks by a significant margin right now.
It's interesting you brought up the White Sox and the San Diego. Not that they're there, obviously his last two starts, but the differences between the two of them is just like the innings pitches: five against Chicago, three and two thirds against San Diego. Both were about the same pitch count, but he was in the zone 35% of the time against the White Sox and 36% of the time against the Padres. The difference is the whiffs. The White Sox were just swinging out of their shoes every time they tried to get one squared up, and they just weren't hitting the curveball especially. So that was the difference. And that's the argent, that's the margin of error between, you know, having a decent start of five innings, one earned, and doing what he did last night. So it's not, you can kind of look back at the last start being like, well, maybe something's there. I don't think that it was anything there. I just think it was the opponent that was really making his game that night. So that all being said, Brad Keller has pitched for this organization for 5.5 seasons. I think, I mean, they're not doing anything this year to contend or anything. This is an assessment year to figure out what everybody else says. Their pitching staff is hurt. They're turning to bullpen games every 5 day or every 5th day just to get through the season. There is really no reason to rush any of the minor league guys until they actually are banging down the door, and nobody in AAA is really doing that, especially none on the 40-man. So there's really no reason to actually cut bait with Brad Keller right now. They're going to keep marching him out there, and they kind of should, to not only as be the right thing as an organization to thank him for his service in these bad Royals teams to actually up his trade value, but keep coaching him, keep letting him tinker out there on the mound against major league talent. It's something that the Royals need it. He needs it. They both have meeting interests to kind of keep trying to be productive. So why not just keep marching him out there at this point? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, bringing up the trade thing, this is a guy that got rumored significant trade interest at a certain level a season ago. Less than 12 months ago, teams were calling, hey, you know, Brad Keller's not looking too good, but if he gets hot a little bit, if we can, you know, get our hands on him and see what we can fix, he has a little bit of club control left. Obviously, that's gone now because he has expired another year of service time. But it's a guy that if he does get hot for, let's say they give him 3 more starts between now and June 1st or whatever the math is going to be, he gets hot for part of that stretch. Or even if it's a month from now, he finds something out on June 15th or June 16th or June 17th and then gets hot for a few starts, all it takes is one team to say, hey, we are a fringe playoff team that wants a little bit of help in our rotation. We want a bit of length. We want someone who can strike guys out. In theory, Brad Keller, maybe they want some help there. He hasn't been doing that. He's been issuing a ton of walks. If he can get some silver lining in his profile, all it takes is one team. And I remember one of the season, everyone said, oh, the Royals fixed Brad Keller. They need to extend him. He's going to be around long term, or they should trade him for a boatload of prospects. Neither one of those are going to happen now. I don't think it's in the best interest of him to be a Royal long term. I don't think it's in the Royals' best interest to invest in him long term. With that said, you either ride it out and let him eat up innings the rest of the year before, I hate to say it, but history shows he gets shut down later in the season or runs out of gas a little bit, or you see if he can improve, you let him keep tinkering. And like, I don't want to say you throw out the start on Monday, or it wasn't Monday, the most recent start. Yeah, it was Monday. I don't want to say you throw it out because it was so bad, but like, he's not going to be quite that bad every time.
No, I'm not. I don't think it's going to be that bad.
Yeah, you let him keep working through it. The walks have to get down a very significant amount. But I'm with Josh. Even though it's bad right now, A, they don't have a ton of guys that can take that spot or are worthy of taking it, which is more of an indictment on the team than anything else. But 2, you see if he can improve just a little bit, get that stock going, because he has shown to be a little bit hot cold at times. If that hot streak does come at the right time, it's going to help the team.
There was an article today talking about his comments after the game last night, talking about how much tinkering he's doing, about what he did at Driveline over the offseason. They're kind of messing with the tempo, messing with the grips, messing with body mechanics, messing with velocity and pitch usage and everything. I genuinely want to know the answer to this. Is like, is there such a thing as like too many moving variables? Is it like,
yeah, it's paralysis by analysis,
right? Or just the fact that like, you keep changing things, you keep lining things up differently, you never know what the constant is gonna be, you know what I mean? Like, you never know what part is actually clicking, and so if you keep messing with, I don't know, there has to be and Zach Bove and Sweeney and that whole group absolutely knows the answer better than me. I just would genuinely like to know, is like, how much is too much? Are they working on all that at the same time, or are they just kind of taking it a step at a time, or inning by inning, really? So I'd just be interested in that.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem for Keller right now, maybe I was a little harsh in what I said at first, but I mean, 8 walks in a major league game, like that's unacceptable for any pitcher, let alone a dude that's leading the league. Like you don't expect that to happen. But he can't throw almost any of his secondary pitches for strikes right now. And like I'm gonna pull this up.
Yeah, look at the curveball, especially this last start.
Yeah,
it was real bad. I think he threw 16.
Oh, Jesus.
16 curveballs last night. One was in the zone.
Yeah. So, yeah, here it is. So, Brad Keller, if you can see this, if you're watching on YouTube, and for our audio listeners, go and check out on YouTube. We got a Baseball Savant pitch visualization pulled up. And the red is his four-seam fastball, and the gold is his slider. There's a lot of green and a lot of blue on the chart as well, and none of them are near the strike zone. I think I see one green dot there, and it's about dick high, if we're being honest. He can throw four pitches, and that's great. When you can't put 50% of them in the strike zone, guys are just going to lay off them the second they see it out of your hand, and that's going to continue to lead to the walks. And when you can only throw two of them in the strike zone, the minute that there is any sort of pitch recognition there, they're going to tee off. Mm-hmm. So he has to figure out a way. If there's any tinkering he's going to do, is just finding a way to get the changeup in the curveball just to be more than a show-me pitch, because that's all it is right now. And I thought we maybe saw a turn when he threw the curveball so much in his first start, but he's still throwing it a pretty decent amount. He just can't get it over anywhere close to a strike. So it's worth nothing to any hitter they're not even thinking about that. It's like, all right, I'm going to let him waste all of this crap around the strike zone. And the minute he throws me a fastball, I'm just going to tee off. And we've seen that throughout the season.
I did just notice that in last night's start, his velo was all down across the board by a mile an hour, maybe two on average. So maybe he's just trying to aim too much. And that's, I don't know.
There could be, and you never want to speculate, but there could be an injury in there when velo was down. Lyle's velo was down. It's just something to monitor. That yeah. I'm not going to be on here saying, oh, he's hurt, because how the hell would I know? But
right.
We normally, one of the first indicators is seeing velo drop pretty significantly. Like, you guys have any more thoughts on Brad Keller before we move on to Nick Prado?
I'd like to see spring training Brad Keller right now.
Please. Please.
Yeah,
because that was the Brad Keller I totally bought into. I think that was part of the thing is, like, and I think that's part of where my frustration comes in. It was like we watched Brad Keller in the spring and never seen him pitch that confidently.
Yeah.
All the stuff was working, and it's like, hey, maybe this is a guy that you extend beyond this year. Maybe this is somebody that can actually be at the rotation. Now it's like, is he even going to get a major league invite to spring training next year? Like, it's leading down that path. It's crazy how fast things can change in the sport. The sport is
potentially so
damn tough.
Potentially more discouraging to that is, did this coaching staff fix him, or did he get this a drive line? If he did get it from this coaching staff, or even if they had any kind of impact on it, then it was already a good hire. So, but that's still as yet to be seen.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take our second break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to KC Sports Network. We'll be right back after this. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
So, one of the biggest catalysts for the turnaround on the offensive side over the last few weeks since he came back up to the majors is Nick Prado. Almost a direct correlation to solid offensive days when he is in the lineup somewhere. We're not going to talk about the 3 strikeouts that he had yesterday. We're not even there. It's in the rearview mirror now.
Yep.
But it was talked about a lot when he came up last year. Like, 2021 really fixed things, hit 35 home runs, and brought back up, like, oh, this guy actually could be a part of the future. Comes up to the big leagues last year, really struggled, struck out a ton, was swinging either too much or not at all. Comes up to the big leagues this year after starting a year in AAA and was doing a lot of the being too selective and truly living up to the I ain't swinging at that shit nickname. Goes back down to AAA and seems like he really made a point to look. If it's in the zone, I need to swing, and I need to. And it's not just pull side damage. It's you know what, I'm going to shoot the ball to left field when I really need to. There, I'm not going to get too pull happy. I'm going to still be selective, hunt my pitch, and get to it. And you can see it in the swing percentages and the plate discipline. He's still walking a fair amount, which is a big part of his game, is his knowledge of the strike zone. Striking out around 30%, but it's down from like 37 last year. So, and for him, 30% is perfectly manageable. Like anywhere in that 25 to 30 range, great. Like I'm not going to worry about that because there is swing and miss in his game. That's okay. Like there's a lot of guys like that that strike out at that clip, but they're able to do damage when they make contact. And for him, he's chasing 6% less than last year, 27.8% out of zone swing percentage. This year, 21.6. His swing rate was 45.3% last year, 39% this year. Yeah. Zone contact rate, 76.8% in 2022, 87.1% in 2023. Like, it is so impressive to see him make these changes and to see it actually work in real time and almost from jump street during that second time that he came back up. Comes up, I think it was the Minnesota series a few weeks ago, and had a three-hit game immediately. And two of those hits, he shot a ball to left field. And you could see him still doing that, just working on just driving the ball to all fields, working to the gaps. And when he's got an opportunity, then he's going to go bridge. And he has two home runs on the season. It's so impressive to see. It's a big part of the reason why the offense is starting to roll a little bit, albeit still semi-inconsistently. But when it all comes together, one of the big reasons is Nick Prado is in the lineup and producing.
So he is slashing. Nick Prado is slashing 328, 411, 500 with a 154 weighted runs created plus.
Is that good?
He's walking 9.6% of the time. He's striking out 32.9% of the time in 19 games. And a lot of people before the season, early in the season, were saying, well, you know, Nick Prado's running out of time. He has to step up. And if he has one bad game, people wanted to give up on him and say he wasn't ready. He's 24 years old. When Drew Waters came over last year at 23 years old, now 24, last year he hit 240. He had a 125 weighted runs created plus. He walked 11% of the time. He struck out 37% of the time. Everyone said, oh man, that was such a strong debut for Drew Waters. He's going to do great things for this club. We need to see what he can do more in the future. And everyone was so excited for him because they hadn't had that track record. Nick Prado is just as young as him. Like, they're the same numerical age right now. They're just different paths of their baseball journey with the Royals. I get that Nick Prado's been around for a while. I get that he has the prospect profile. I get that he has played a lot of baseball in the Kansas City Royals organization because that's all he's known. But this is a guy that's still young, and he still was going through. He needed this kind of more analytically inclined approach and this tweaking. He needed that back then, when he quote-unquote revived his minor league career. He still needs it. He's going to keep tweaking stuff, and he's never going to be this low strikeout guy. He's showing glimpses of the Nick Prado that the Royals invested in. And I mean, he hit 310 his last nine games. He hit 343 in his first 10. Like, he's been fairly equal, and he started off at a high level. He's producing at a high level now. He's hitting the ball up the middle more now than he ever has. This year, hitting 229 against fastballs, but 500 against breaking pitches, 400 against off-speed. Last year, he hit 167 against breaking balls and 108 against off-speed pitches. So I like the approach. He's swinging less in the zone but making more contact, and he's being selective still and being living up to that nickname like Joel mentioned. It's early. Again, 19 games is not going to make a full season for him. Those numbers are going to come down at some point to a certain degree, but I do feel more confident now in Nick Prado than I did, let's say, 30 days ago.
I agree. And I think if I'm keeping track, this is like Nick Prado 3.0 at this point.
Yeah.
At the
basically
career,
yeah.
The reinvention of Nick Prado's. But yeah, you guys mentioned it. The one thing you guys didn't mention off that jumped off the page and one of the indicators that I always look for when it comes to hitting profiles is his line drive percentage. Right now, it's a 35%, 35% line drive rate. he's got 73 plate appearances, and when I take the qualifications for minimum plate appearances to 70, he is second in the major leagues in line drive percentage, only behind Jesus Sanchez somehow in Miami. But that is huge. That is absolutely nuts. And the fact, Jordan, you brought up the fact that he's absolutely raking his breaking balls and off-speed pitches, that means pitchers are going to start throwing fastballs at him. You know what's going to come after that? Home runs. His power is going to start beaming up. You'll probably see a little bit less for average, but if he's hitting fastballs at that kind of line drive angle, they're going to start going out of the park way more frequently. We're going to see another version of Nick Prado. But I think at this version, we need to start talking about where he needs to hit in the lineup. There was a lot of outrage lately about where Bobby Witt Jr., he needs to be out of the leadoff spot. I think Nick Prado could be a potential candidate for that leadoff spot, especially right now. Go with him and then Bobby in the two hole and Vinny at three, Salvi at four. That is a nasty top four in that lineup, a very dangerous top four. And I would be very on board seeing that kind of moving forward, just to kind of, if we're still throwing stuff at the wall, why not back Nick Prado? He's got the, I mean, he's going to get the reps. You want him to get the reps. Why not?
It's like having Kyle Schwarber or a George
Schwarber. Yes.
Like someone that can do damage.
Yep.
Like right away. I don't hate that idea. That would be very hashtag fun.
I think when they start getting into the thick of it and the contention window starts opening a little bit, then we start talking about where it goes. Yeah, yeah.
But until they decide to listen to this podcast, put Nick Prado in the leadoff. So I just put Michael Garcia there, please.
Yeah, we'll see.
Just please hit Michael Garcia leadoff.
I love Josh. He's just like, yeah, we'll see about that. Like I have thoughts on Michael Garcia that haven't really changed from the last time I talked about Michael Garcia, but like seeing everybody else has changed, not Joel, not like this podcast is still very consistent.
Very pro Michael
Garcia. What we thought about him. But at the same time though, like I hate saying, I apparently love saying small sample size, but like I've said it probably 500 times this season already. People are giving up on the kid because the numbers aren't great. And I'm like, peripherally, you look at Royals Farm Report's Twitter. I don't have the tweet pulled up. He's doing almost everything right. The results just aren't there. And everyone said, the opening month of the season, I don't want to go on, you know, a long monologue about Michael Garcia, but the offense was bad. And everyone said, okay, the numbers of the peripherals look good. The offense is going to creep up. And now the past few weeks, the offense has been creeping up. They don't want to keep the same energy for a young kid because it's been, you know, X amount of days and Nicky Lopez is going to be back in the lineup soon. And there's going to be some fluctuation. But the same Royals offense that went from 29th or 30th in WHIP runs created plus, and then had a couple weeks stretch where they were a top five offense in baseball. That's kind of the ebb and flow of the season. I don't think they're either of those. I don't think Michael Garcia was ever going to be the guy that hit the ground running and came out like a tank. I also don't think he's an 81 weighted runs created plus or whatever he is right now. Like, I think eventually he'll be better than that.
So Michael Garcia, here is the tweet from Royals Farm. Well, this is a little arbitrary, but been one of the Royals' two best defenders. I think that's pretty inarguable. Second best K rate, third best hard hit rate, second best chase rate, fourth best line drive rate, and the second worst BABIP. I don't know. That looks like a leadoff hitter to me, considering Bobby swung at the first pitch tonight and popped out to the first baseman.
Hey, trying to ambush. Can't get mad at him.
There's a combo to be had about him on a future podcast, by the way.
Mm. Oh, so by the way, the tweet that I just saw was he's hitting 107 on the first pitch of an at-bat when he swings at
Sheesh. It. Okay.
All right, Esky. Let's calm down, buddy. How else would I turn it
off? All right. Anyway, minor league report.
There's actually, I mean, there's a lot of good things actually going on. I'm not trying to make too many jokes. If we want to talk about a guy that has really struggled, but it's having but had a decent night tonight, Gavin Cross hit a home run. That is good to see. Noah Cameron, he was not on my list of guys to talk about, but tonight, six innings, one strikeout, or one walk, 11 strikeouts, no runs,
good
hits. Yeah, I think that'll play.
Get him up. It's time.
Nearly a 40% called strike whiff rate. That, I think, is... he's pretty close to ready.
Get him up. What are we doing here, guys?
And then another guy that continues to just, I mean, what he's doing right now is a showing what this organizational philosophy change with pitching, like that it's working. and that there are guys that are talented. They're just not close to the big league, so we don't really get to see the fruits of it yet at the big league level. Anthony Veneziano has a 1.45 ERA in seven starts, 37 into third innings, 43 strikeouts to four walks. Walks were a huge issue for him last year, 66 in 122 and two-thirds. He's always had the strikeout stuff, but to have the strikeout stuff without the walks now, massive, massive.
Is the velo holding still?
I need to hit up our guy Preston Farr to know, because I haven't seen any velo stuff. But if he's in the mid-90s, like at
that
least
place.
He's like 94 to 96,
yep.
That would be really nice. I haven't seen anything about it, but I also haven't heard any concerns. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's sort of a no news is good news situation when it comes to that.
I remember talking about Veneziano in the offseason. He was a potential Rule 5 casualty, and everybody was wanting to talk about TJ Sikkema being the guy that everybody thought Sikkema was the guy that had to be added to this 40-man. I was like, Veneziano is one season removed from what he lead.
He led the Oregon K's.
Yeah. So he was always a guy that, you know, he had the stuff, and if he put it together, he could turn into a dominant guy with a left hand. And that's always going to be more valuable than a dude with a right hand. So still a little old. He's only 25 years old in Double A. So it's probably time to get him up, see what he could do in Triple A, especially if he's chugging, you know, only four walks in the year. That is bonkers to me. So get Veneziano up in Omaha right now, and then have Cameron fill it in behind him. That's fine with me.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that.
To give a hitter spotlight, I don't know how we haven't talked about this guy hardly at all on this show. Javier Vaz in High A Quad Cities. He was picked out of Vanderbilt last year. Alex Duvall and I saw him in the College World Series a couple of years ago. And in within an inning of each other, he laid down a sack bunt that turned into a hit and then made a diving play out in left field. And we looked at each other and went, that's a Royal right there. And very funny when the Royals actually picked him, but it's not like he's, you know, it was a reach or whatever. He's got a 150 WHIP runs created plus in High A right now, slashing 304, 389, 481. We're doing without a ton of power. The fact that the slug's up near five, nearly got a five on it. That's really nice to see. And he's striking at 7.7% of the time, walking a hell of a lot more than he's, or walking a hell of a lot more than he's striking out. He can play some middle infield. He can play some corner outfield. So just some positional versatility. Like, and everything about his profile right now is for me, this isn't like a fool's gold thing where he's like Luis Arraez-ing his way around, you know, around the big leagues. Like a lot, you know, it is really nice to see right now what he's doing and proving that this could actually be a dude and a top 30 type guy in this organization. Maybe by midseason. If not, he'll probably go to Double A at some point this year. And we're looking at a guy that could legitimately play his way out of the big leagues by the end of 24. Like, I feel that confident that his batted ball profile, his positional versatility, it could work for sure.
Speaking of dudes, not to completely derail anything, we're still on minor league talk. Alec Marsh is slowly beginning to look more and more like the dude that people knew back before he got kind of started getting shelled and had some durability problems, like 3.67 ERA. He's averaging 11 strikeouts per nine. The walks are down to 2.33 per nine. That plays in six starts, 27 innings pitched. The BABIP is 3.75. It's like he's ran into some bad luck. He's still getting hit around quite a bit. 2.45 FIP or FIP. Do you guys say FIP or FIP?
I say FIP.
FIP. Why don't we say
Ibra
or Ibra or
Jif
Jeff Ibra? WRC plus though, or OPS or OPS. I guess it's FIP. I'm gonna go with FIP. I just caught myself. Anyway, Alec Marsh is starting to look better, and he's also on that timeline of like, hey, like tick tick tick. It needs to be promotion, and then see what you can do at the big league level, and let's see. You know, you can only quote-unquote dominate or find yourself or re-find yourself or reaffirm what people already thought of you at a level for so long before you have to get bumped up. So the Royals have some positives in their minor league ranks. And Josh, I'm stalling so you can pull up your tweet if you still have it of the Royals updated organizational pitching ranks in I think it was strikeouts and walks, and I'm going to keep talking until Josh gets it pulled up because it's a really good tweet.
Got it.
Okay, so I'm done stalling, and that is my final pitching-related minor league contribution. Josh, take it away.
Yeah, the one thing that you missed about the Alec Marsh part to me was last year he was also getting hit. The average, or opponent's yes. average was also really high, and that's gone down as well. So he's missing bats, not walking guys, and not giving up a high average. He also only pitched two innings his last time out with 14 batters faced. So kind of curious to see what he is next time out. So we'll see about that. But yes, I did. There's no good place to find team rankings as far as like pitching across all minor league categories go. So you kind of have to extrapolate all that manually. It's a huge pain in the butt. But I did it, finally, to figure out where the organization ranks as a whole compared to all the other organizations in the Major League Baseball throughout their entire minor league rosters. And right now, the whole organization in the minor leagues ranks fourth in K percentage with 26.9. Very chef's kiss for the K rate. And then ninth in walk percentage at 11.4%. That's still really high. I think last year they had, like, it's very similar walk rate, and it was like 18th. So I would still like to see that ball or the walks rates down, but relative to the rest of the organizations in baseball, that's still fourth and ninth best between those two rates, and that's huge. Those are both rates they absolutely struggled with last year. Good to see them bouncing back this year. It's just very, very good to see. Encouraging stuff.
One quick note before we get out of here. We don't have the actual stats because it's complex league and they haven't moved to affiliated ball yet. But it feels like every time we look at the surprise Royals tweet, we see Austin Charles is like 2-for-4 with a stolen base and two RBIs, something like that. It's just, I cannot wait to watch this guy when he goes to Columbia. For those that may not know, he was the 20th round pick last year. I don't know how he got to the 20th round. 6'4", 215, plays shortstop. Was listed as a two-way player. Sounds like he's just going to play shortstop and hit for the Royals. There doesn't sound like there's any plans for the Royals to let him pitch. Why the hell not? But I can't wait to see this guy because he just looks like a freak athlete. He seems to be hitting the ball well right now in the complex. I think he's pretty close to ready for affiliated ball. I'm cool with them slow playing it. He's going to be 19, or he'll be 19 for this entire season. He doesn't turn 20 until November, so a lot of time on it, but a guy definitely to keep an eye on because the little box scores that we've gotten, it's pretty good stuff to see.
He's definitely one of those late rounders who are like, oh, okay, I know exactly where we're headed with this. And I think we even speculated a little bit last year that he actually agreed to sign because maybe the Royals did think that he could do some pitching and maybe that had something to do with it, or maybe he didn't and just wanted to play shortstop and they're like, yeah, giddy up, let's do it. So I'm interested on them taking a shot on an athlete like that for sure.
So his height is, you read 6'4 on his bio, but as you read down, he's actually 6'6, 215.
I'll just say, I thought he was like 6'7. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like Odell.
That's fun. Yeah. Certainly fun. And man, if he turns into the dude that I think he could be, the Royals could have a really fun prospect on their hands.
Yeah.
That is going to do it for One Royal Way this week. Thank y'all so much. Please like and subscribe this video on YouTube. If you're watching there, be sure to leave us 5-star reviews on Spotify and iTunes. Let us know how we're doing. Leave comments, leave reviews. Let us know what you guys want to hear moving forward. We appreciate all of the support, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard and think others would as well. You can find all 6 of our channels at KCSN. Covering the Chiefs, the Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou, by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.